Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and I'm very happy to be here with you this afternoon. So our country is experiencing lots of new things, resonating from some older things, and we can't seem to really find our way with some of them. So let's look at the Rittenhouse decision. Kyle Rittenhouse, who was found not guilty of two counts of murder and one count of attempted murder, when he shot individuals who were attacking him during a riot in Wisconsin. Now, I can understand that people who don't understand the self-defense laws might see what he did as not defensible. But the reality is, and because our media is not really handling this appropriately, they're not going to break things down like I'm trying to break things down for us. If you have a legal right to have a weapon, then you have a legal right to have it. You don't have to justify yourself. You don't have to come up with reasons why you have the weapon. If you're allowed to have it, you're allowed to have it, right? Doesn't that make sense? That's the law. So we know that Kyle Rittenhouse legally possessed the weapon that he had. Now, that does not address whether that was a wise decision or not to go there. And we've talked about that before here. Whether it was wise to go to that event armed with a gun, but I'm sure he felt he needed it in case he was attacked, which he was. Which is a good thing he had the weapon then, I guess, right? Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to protect yourself. But we still see some members of our media and other people in positions of authority and power are still calling him a murderer, are still saying that he did things illegally, that he possessed the gun illegally, he crossed state line. Why would they persist with these lies? I don't know. And how come nobody calls them out? And let's hear this definitively was heard in the courtroom. The jury spoke very loudly. And the jury is you and me. We are the jury. We are represented as the juries. We're the people. You know, the people make the decision. Had the decision gone the other way, I probably would have said, gee, that didn't seem right, but that would be the decision of the jury. That's how juries go. So because we don't see our media coming out and explaining exactly what happened and why he had a right to have the weapon and why he had a right to defend himself, like we all have a right to defend ourselves when we're under attack, they're conflating two things that the prosecutor brought up. One of the prosecutors in the case brought up the fact that as soon as you go and you start a confrontation, especially with a weapon, you lose your right to self-defense. So in other words, if Kyle had showed up at the parade with a weapon and he saw a bunch of protesters protesting whatever, and he ran up to them and he pointed a weapon at them and he was going to shoot them just because they were protesting, and somebody there managed to draw their weapon and shoot him, then they would be in the right, and he would have been an attacker. And an attacker has no right to self-defense. But in this case, we saw lots of I don't want to call it prosecutorial misconduct, but we saw things that weren't true. When the prosecutor told everyone that Kyle was chasing down the men that he killed, and then we saw the video, and Kyle didn't chase them down. They chased him down and attacked him. He was leaving the area and they came after him and he had to defend himself. That is not in dispute anymore. And anyone who says it is didn't see the trial, didn't see the evidence, and apparently didn't hear the jury. Now they're talking about going after him on federal charges, which I'm sure are going to be civil rights violations, that he violated the civil rights of the two men he killed and the man he shot. But I don't know how you can go after somebody for civil rights violations if they were in the right to defend themselves. I don't know how they're going to twist the court. All I know is there's a constituency in half the country that wants to see this kid persecuted. Even though he was found not guilty, they still want him charged because they don't like the fact that he did what he did. And that's something we have to argue about as a people. You know, there are some people saying we need to change the self-defense laws. We need to change the right to carry laws. We need to do all these kind of different things so that someone like him who was within the law and in his rights to do what he did isn't allowed to do it. There's not a lot of logic in that. You take away self-defense rights. Well, let's break that out. It sounds like what they're saying is they don't want you to have a right of self-defense if you're defending yourself against something that they believe is righteous, like looting, burning, rioting, and attacking you if you try to prevent that kind of illegal activity. You have no right to prevent that. Therefore, you have no right to self-defense. I don't know how anybody could see it any other way. It seems pretty clear to me. The next thing I'd like to talk about, and I want to I want to address my comments to those people who listen in here to Chasing Justice. Not just you, my beloved Chasing Justice family, but there's lots of people that listen in here like they do to most shows where we question things. When you question the standard that's considered the only truth. You know, in our country, we now have things that are, there's only one side. And if you're not on that side, you'll be attacked. Even if you're right, if you don't call the orthodoxy of certain groups and people, if you go against that, they will come and attack you, even if you're right and within your rights to say and do things. So people that are listening in, here's where you went wrong in trying to say that Lieutenant Joe says things that are inappropriate. What we do here on Chasing Justice is we ask questions. We ask questions about situations. We don't just believe one side 100% is right. The other side has nothing to say. And if you believe that other side, we have nothing to do with you. You're wrong. You should be removed. When we see that half of our country is upset by an election result, doesn't have to be the presidential election, any election result. When we see half the country is upset by that, and half the country that's upset is told to shut up and sit down, you have no right to even ask questions about anything, I say that's not right. Maybe there was something wrong with the election. Maybe there wasn't. The fact that half of the country thinks there is something wrong means we have to ask questions. Now, in our modern world, asking questions that doesn't toe the line of the orthodoxy or the approved truth, that's what gets you into trouble. And apparently that's what people are trying to go after Lieutenant Joe for, because I say we should ask questions, okay? So just to know that those people are out there, it's very interesting. They like to twist your words. They like to look at only certain things. They don't really listen in context. I remember Rush Limbaugh saying, you couldn't really understand his show if you didn't listen for 6 weeks. If you just listened to one little blip of anything that he said, you could twist it in any way you wanted. And he was right. But I listened to Rush a lot. I liked him. I found his show entertaining and funny. And I listened for a long time. And the people that would come up and say things about Rush, I knew were completely not true. Because I had listened for so long, I understand the context in which he speaks. So the context of Chasing Justice is that in the pursuit of justice, which is our focus here, no matter where that justice is that we have to ask questions about lots of topics. Sometimes things that are uncomfortable to ask questions about. But that is the only appropriate thing to do in a situation where we have people with many different points of view. We have to ask the questions, be honest, and answer things honestly. And then it can help us come to a decision one way or another. Now, if we did that appropriately, if we asked honest questions and we had honest debate and honest answers, we would be able to settle many of the important issues of the day. But we can't. We have a situation where some things are considered appropriate, other things are inappropriate, and it doesn't matter if they're truthful or righteous or anything else. If they're considered inappropriate, you will not talk about them. And if you do, you're bad. So that's I just wanted to throw that out there. That's what we do here, is we ask questions about all of these topics because people have a right to have their questions answered, to have their voices heard. That's the beauty of America. That's the beauty of free speech, right? We can call our government out for redress. We can ask questions, and we deserve to get honest, truthful answers in any situation. I wish our media would look at that and say, hey, let's be truthful about things. Let's tell the truth. It would be so much better for everyone to make decisions, wouldn't it? If you got real truth. And it doesn't have to be the truth that you want to believe in. The truth is what the truth is, just like justice is what justice is, not just what you want it to be. So that would be interesting. I would like to see that going forward. What else is going on? I don't think we can go forward without mentioning the school shooting in Oxford, Michigan. Terrible tragedy, but tragedy is not really the word. This was an attack. This was a vicious attack. And the young man who committed this vicious attack, apparently is a 15-year-old kid. I don't want to use his name. But as of right now, he's been charged with 4 counts of murder and 7 counts, I believe, of aggravated assault and a count of terrorism. Now, when you read that, you say, why would they call what he did a count of terror? Well, apparently the officials are saying, we can't go into it right now, but there's more to the story. He didn't just decide to attack people. There was more to what he was doing. And I say, good for them. People that do these kind of attacks, we have to prosecute them to the fullest extent of the law for 2 reasons. One, for justice for the victims, and to remove that person from society so they don't hurt us again. And 2, said other people who were considering this kind of attack realize they will be held accountable and maybe will dissuade them from their violent activities. You know, I always wonder when I hear about these school shootings, how much preparation the school had done, you know, because it's really, the chances of being involved in a school shooting are really very, very small. I think statistically, if you look at that, there are 100,000 schools in our country, and I'm guessing at that number. I think that's a number I heard somewhere along the way. There are 100,000 schools in our country. Every year, until recently, there was probably between 10 and 20 real active shooter incidents in schools. What's horrifying is that we don't hear about a lot of them anymore if the body count is not more than 3 or 4 people. You know, somebody kills one person in a school, may not even make the mainstream media, which really speaks terribly about our culture. But in this particular incident, this young man killed 4 people, and there's other people still injured in the hospital. There could be more deaths. It's absolutely tragic for the victims, the community, and the school, but it is criminal. It is evil what this kid did. And we need to find out all the facts. But I always wonder how prepared are any of us? If you're in a business right now, how much preparation does your business do? Do you train your people to respond to violence? Do you train your officials in your school, your synagogue, your church, your business? Do you train everyone what to look for so that you can identify potentially dangerous people before they attack us? Because we can do that. We can identify potentially dangerous people before they attack our schools, places of religion, our workplaces, our schools, all that. We can certainly identify them if we make the effort. And I always wonder, you know, how much effort is made when a school attack happens. Did they take it seriously? Did they try? And you know what? I'm going to say this. Unless you are screening and searching every backpack or not permitting backpacks into the school, unless you are using metal detectors or something like the view scan, which is a non-traditional metal detector that picks up weapons. It's a weapons detection system. Unless you're using something like that to screen everyone coming in, one of these kids can come in with a gun and they can attack people. And that's where understanding how to identify potentially dangerous people before they attack is so important. Now, excuse me. We know that there are people don't wake up on a Tuesday morning. This kid who killed 4 classmates and injured 7 or 8 others, he didn't wake up that morning and have a bright idea. You know what? I think I will take this gun that's in my house, my father's house, and I will go out and shoot and kill some people in my school. Whatever reason he did that for, that had been brewing for a while, either in his head, in his writings. There would have been ways to see this, things he had said and done. And because they're charging him with a terrorism count, leads me to believe that there may be more to the story that we'll hear later on, that he had been planning this at a greater level. But the point is, can we identify those people? And the answer is, in many cases, yes, we can. We can identify these people before they attack us. And that's something that we should make sure that all of our schools, organizations, everybody prepares themselves for. Train your people to spot violence, to take threats seriously, to identify what threats are, whether they're social media, written threats, verbal threats, however it's you get a threat, so that we can intervene before these people hurt us and hurt our kids. And it's just a terrible tragedy for those families and those students who lost their lives. And I pray God heals the families and takes those children's soul into heaven, because what a terrible thing. And as for the killer, he's an animal. He killed people in cold blood, and he should face whatever justice comes his way. And if that's the death penalty, then let him have the death penalty. Whatever that state authorizes is the appropriate thing for him. What came inevitably, I saw in the reports is that while we recognize this was a terrible tragedy, this is a terrible crime, it points out how we need better gun laws. How many gun laws do they have in Chicago? How many gun laws do they have in New York? We have so many gun laws on the books. It's amazing that we can't clean up those kind of problems, gun problems, crime problems. But we have to be dedicated to going after criminals. And that is what we're not dedicated to. We're not dedicated to going after criminals. We are looking at things now in a new light. We are trying to be enlightened about crime. And we're saying that violent criminals should not always be held to bail. They shouldn't be put in jail. They shouldn't be held away from us. We should clear out the jails and give people a second chance. Well, that would be wonderful. That would be wonderful if people would learn their lesson and not hurt us again. But that's not really how it works. Human nature being what it is, when somebody demonstrates that they are dangerous, they need to be removed from the rest of us. Because I don't want my family, my friends, anyone I know to be victimized by crime. And I'm sure you don't either. I mean, who would? It's always someone else's problem until it happens to you. And that's why we must all do everything we can to have a safe and secure society for everyone. In every city, every town, everywhere. Because everyone deserves that. Another thing we got going on. There is a landmark Supreme Court case going on right now. And this is, they're saying it's going to be the overturning of Roe versus Wade. Now, I don't know if it will be the overturning of Roe versus Wade. I've heard this for many, many years. I've heard this every time a new Supreme Court justice is placed on the court, that this will, you know, whichever way it goes. If it's a liberal justice that they put on the court, then Roe versus Wade is saved and abortion will stay legal. If it's a conservative justice that gets put on the court, then they're going to overturn Roe and abortion won't be legal. Well, the reality is that these kind of decisions should be made at the state level. You know, I know our Supreme Court found a privacy right in abortion many years ago in Roe versus Wade, and that's what they based this on, that you have a right to an abortion because it's privacy between a woman and her doctor. And I get that. It's not in the Constitution. This was constructed response from a court, a progressive court that was looking to make that decision. And that is the nature of our system. Now, what I'm seeing now, and I don't know how this is going to come out, I'm going to say that I'm skeptical that the court will overturn Roe because of the fact that there is precedent. We have a precedent-setting case here in Roe versus Wade that there are abortion rights. They've been pushed to the limit. They've been pushed to the point that right up to the moment of birth, an abortion is legal in some places. And I don't want to argue the merits of that either way. What I want to say is that I don't think the court has not demonstrated the courage to make a clear decision. Matter of fact, one of the things that came out when they were talking about what the justices were doing during the arguing of this case is that they were not only arguing about the merits of the case before them, a Mississippi law that restricts abortion, but they were worried about how their decision would make the court look? How would the court look by reassessing a previous decision by a previous court? How would it look if they changed Roe versus Wade after it's been the law of the land for so long? Well, I look at it this way. The law is set in place for a purpose. The law is there for a purpose, and that purpose is to help us as citizens navigate interaction between each other and the world around us so that we all do it in a fair and just way. Right? To make sure we don't rob each other. There's a law against robbery. There's a law against sexual assault. So we don't just go around assaulting each other because somebody feels like doing it. Right? We protect each other and we all agree to live under these laws so that we have a good and decent society. When it comes to changing a precedent, I think we can't go by the concept that the world is flat. You know, the concept of the world is flat is that at one point people believed the earth was flat. And that was the scientific point of view. That was the belief of the scientists. That was the belief of the nobility, the people of authority, that the world was flat. And over the course of time, new information came to light. New technology was developed to help us see clearer, to understand the world around us. And guess what? We didn't think the world was flat anymore. And we changed our belief system based on fact. And that is what Chasing Justice is all about. It's about facts. It's about asking questions, getting to the bottom, to the truth. That's what we're all about here. So just like we don't think the world is flat anymore, if the court gets new information, I've heard people, newscasters talking about Roe versus Wade, saying since 1972, when the case came into being, the ability to save a premature child has changed dramatically. Technology, medicines, techniques, things that we have now did not have in 1972. And therefore, that's new information. You know, the go by the science crowd, you have to look at that and say to yourself, well, if there's new information and new technology and there's a new law that has been proposed to take those changes and the updates and technology and everything else into account, then maybe we should look at that. Maybe we maybe we should ask the questions. And if the answer comes out different than it did previously, then you set a new precedent based on fact. That is how honesty and openness and truth works, right? We look at facts and we make decisions. So overturning a previous court decision just because we feel like overturning it, that's not appropriate. A court case that was settled in 1805 still has relevance today in how we do business or how we do transact other interactions with people, and it should stay in place. But if we were to find that there's been change or new information has been developed or something new has happened that causes us to look at a situation differently, and that causes the court to take all of that into consideration and change a precedent, well, then so be it. That's the purpose of a court. That's the purpose of justices looking at courts. That's the purpose of arguing the cases. So I guess we'll see soon enough. There are some people out there who think Roe versus Wade will be overturned. Others think it will not. I think, if anything, and I could be surprised, this court has surprised me in its lack of boldness, where it won't make certain decisions that most of people think are right or half the people think are right. They just won't do it because they don't want to get involved. They don't want to have a problem. Then you shouldn't be on the court. If you're more worried about that, how the court looks or how you're going to be treated, then you should get off the court and let other people get on the court that are worried about the law and justice and make decisions based on law and justice, not on how you're going to look or how the court's going to look. That's not justice. But I guess we'll know soon enough if anything will happen. I would think probably the court, if it does anything, might come down to the fact of saying, this has to go back to the states. The states individually have to make rights about whether or not they're going to make laws about whether or not they are going to allow abortion in each state. And because abortion is not in the Constitution, we see that that's the proper role for this. Should be state by state. And if you live in a state where they want to have abortions and you want to have one, good. If you live in a state where they don't want to have abortions, then you don't have one. If you want to move, that we're allowed to move. So it's funny, I saw another report today, and I wish I had the specifics, but I was tied up most of the day today. I apologize, my friends. But in listening to different stories coming across the wire, there's a report that as Americans, when we are making a move to move to a new place, we are moving to states that are more aligned to our beliefs politically. So in other words, blue states are getting bluer and red states are getting redder because people who believe in red state constitutional conservative kind of things are moving to states where that's the majority opinion. And people who are more progressive, liberal, socialist are moving to blue states where that's more in vogue. And that would be interesting. A few years back, I wrote an article about creating two countries. And that was the bottom line. That what if we split the country in half, right down the middle, and liberal, progressive, socialist people would all live in the north, and conservative, traditionalist, constitutionalist people would live in the south, and we would have relations with each other based on trade pacts and all, just like any other countries. But everybody be happy. Everything that you want to happen in a socialist state would happen in your states because you'd be the socialist states of America and the constitutional states of America would be the other states. Doesn't it seem like it's more and more that that's a possibility? That if people are starting to move to those states, we're seeing people actually live out that possibility more than simply just talk about it. And I don't know the statistic. I'm going to look up this article and see if I can find more about it. I found it interesting because that was something that we had talked about, a while ago, and now it looks like people are actually doing it. If you believe that, you're a blue state kind of person and you live in a red state, you're not going to be happy. So you move to a blue state. If you are a red state person, you live in a blue state, you need to get out of there and go to a red state where you're happy. So we're seeing that migration start to take place. And I find it interesting that we're starting to see it. So how Roe versus Wade will survive if it goes back to the states, if our country splits into two, if we have this revolution that people have been talking about, I don't know. But don't you think we should ask questions about it? Don't we should see, if people are talking about splitting the country in half, shouldn't we ask those people, why do you think that? Why do you feel that way? What is wrong that you think we need to change how we live? Just like our friends on the left who are very progressive and want socialism, shouldn't we sit down and have that discussion? How do you honestly think it's going to be better to socialize us, to get rid of capitalism, to destroy our history? How is that going to make us better? Let's hear your vision and let's talk about it. Maybe they're right, but we won't know unless we have a real, honest decision about these kind of things. All right, so we'll find out as time goes by, but I just wanted to throw those out there to get us started today. So we'll be back in a minute with more Chasing Justice. I want to tell you quickly about a healthy cell, the immune boost. I started to feel a little sinusy a couple weeks ago, and I take the immune boost, and I said, you know what? I forgot. I actually hadn't taken it for a couple of days. I was away on business. I came home, I took my immune boost, and boom, 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 and within a couple of days, it never progressed to the point of a sinus infection, which, for me, in my history, I get them all the time. So I find that it boosts my immunity, and it helps me to stay healthy. My wife's taking it, Miss Kathy, she's taking it. She feels much better. They also have a product for sleep, if you're having a problem sleeping. So look at Healthy Cell. Go look them up, healthycell.com. They have lots of products. They're really good stuff. I don't get anything out of this, but they're on the network. And because I tried it, I want you to know that I think it actually works. And sometimes we need people to tell us when things work and when they don't. This is Lieutenant Joe. We'll be back in a minute with more Chasing Justice.
Because of COVID-19, many Americans worry about their health 4 times a day. That's 112 times per month. But by simply keeping our immune system strong, we can stay healthy and put our worries at ease. One little known way to do this is by taking AC-11. a patented supplement from a plant in the Amazon rainforest. Studied for over 20 years and backed by over 40 scientific peer-reviewed studies, taking AC11 has been proven to extend the life of immune cells called leukocytes, allowing you to boost immunity naturally. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of AC11. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
While the cancel culture is determined to destroy our history, bringing violence and terror to city streets, America Out Loud will enhance its own message of love and honor for the American traditions and constitutional values that have always been the backbone of what America means: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to Chasing Justice here on round two. So what's new on the pandemic scene? This is another thing where Lieutenant Joe has been questioned. You know, if you question the vaccine, you're bad. If you question the origin of the virus, you're bad. And I'm here to tell you, we have to ask questions. We have to ask questions about any medicine they want us to have. Isn't it proper to ask questions about whether a mandate is legal? Oh, no. No, the orthodoxy says you will accept the mandate. And if you question it, you must be a crazy freak who hates everybody. And then you must be some kind of person we got to get rid of. Well, I'm here to say this. We now have, what is it, Omicron? Is that how you say it? Or Omicron, the new variant? Now, we see lots of doctors and scientists talking about it now. Apparently, it was first spotted in South Africa. And I have to say, there was an argument made. The South African governments are upset that we've banned travel from them, from their countries to America. And they're saying, you know, we did the right thing. We identified this. We told everyone right away. We didn't do what the Chinese did. We didn't keep it to ourselves for a long time. We told right away, and now we're being damaged by not being allowed to travel to America and to these other countries that have banned the travel. And I guess I could see their point that they did the right thing. They told the world right away. They had done some research. They identified this new Omicron variant. And they told the world. That's a good thing. You know, I applaud them for doing that. That's what we have to do as nations that are united across the world, to do the right thing for each other. But that doesn't change the fact that if there's all kinds of virus in America, say the next one that comes up, the Flugelhorn variant comes up, and it has all kinds of properties that make people, your feet fall off, you talk backwards. It really causes problems and could cause death, the Flugelhorn variant of the pandemic. And it's in America, and it's nowhere else in the world. Is it unreasonable for the rest of those countries to say, listen, if you're from America, sorry, you can't come here until we get this under control? Why would you want someone to bring that to your country? Right, that doesn't seem to not make sense to me. If it's there in America, and we don't have it anywhere else in the world, then we don't want you coming to our country until you get that under control. Because then it'll be here, and people, no, that's terrible, that's horrible, that's this and that. Even President Biden, the great President Joe Biden, what did he say when he was a candidate about Donald Trump? That he was racist, that he was xenophobic. Because he wanted to ban travel from China, where the virus started, because he didn't want it to come here to America. Well, Trump did that, and I think it slowed the progression. Once it gets here, it's here. It's a virus. But I think that slowed it getting here, gave us some time to work on vaccines and think of what we could do to try and solve this thing. But now, Joe Biden, who said that when Trump did it, it was xenophobic and racist, he just did that to countries from Africa. Where are all the news media jumping up and down calling Joe Biden racist and xenophobic? Because he doesn't want people from Africa to come here where they could bring the Omicron variant. I'm not going to argue with the president. I'm going to say President Biden, that was a prudent move. I don't like the fact that he's hypocritical about it and that the media is hypocritical and didn't bring up the fact that, hey, Joe, you know you're a hypocrite. Do you want to apologize to President Trump now for doing that and recognize that that was a brilliant and smart thing to do? I don't expect that to happen, but wouldn't that be the right thing to have? Oh, my gosh. President Biden, a science first kind of guy, realizes that maybe he didn't understand when Trump did this, but now that he has new information and he's in charge of things, maybe we don't want that Omicron variant to come here. And the only way to stop it from coming here is preventing people traveling here from where it is. So he did that. So I applaud him that he did it. I just don't like his hypocrisy and the fact that no one will point it out. You know, what are we going to do about that? How many times have we talked about hypocrisy here? It's wholesale. It's a wholesale commodity now, hypocrisy. There's so many people that are just hypocritical in so many ways. It's hard to even keep track anymore because it doesn't matter anymore. You could be completely hypocritical. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter what side of the aisle you're from, what company owner you are. It don't matter. If you're hypocritical and it serves the purpose of, you know, whoever the orthodoxy of the day is all about, then it's good. Then that's a good thing that you were hypocritical, just like lying. Lying is good as long as you lie for a good reason, you know? Like the proven Russia hoax, you know, that was a lie. Now, those of us who understood criminal activity and could tell when people were testifying and could see things, we could say, that doesn't seem to make any sense to me. That sounds like a lie. And then it was proved to be a lie. Those things can be damaging. They damaged all of us, whether you were a Trump supporter or not. Just like I say, Biden is the president. He's my president. I didn't vote for him. I don't agree with his policies, but he's my president. He's the president of the United States. And I hope for the best for him that he makes good decisions for our country. I would have hoped everyone would have done that when Trump was president because he was the president and he was trying to do things to help all of us. You may not agree with it, but that was the purpose. And this is where we've gone so far wrong down the road is this anger because somebody's on the other side. We have to hate everything they do. We have to hate them. We have to destroy them. Instead of trying to figure out how can we work together to solve these problems. See, without solving the problems continue and they just get worse. You know, recently we see some turnovers. We see this Maxwell trial. This abuse of young underage girls, what do they call pedophile island? This guy Epstein who killed himself. Now, aren't there a lot of people who think he didn't kill himself? Do we know? We don't know. We haven't seen the reports. I don't know what happened to that guy. It seems to me like he probably killed himself. He was probably looking at going to jail for a very, very long time. And like many people in his position, he decided to kill himself. Most likely, when you use Occam's razor, the simplest thing is usually the truth. That's probably what it is. The fact that so many prominent people may have partaken in the inappropriate things that he had going on in his mansions and in his island or whatever, that's what leads to the conspiracy theory stuff. When people say, oh, well, they must have taken him out because he was going to give up the big names. Yeah. Maybe he was, maybe he wasn't. But Occam's razor tells us that most likely this guy was somebody who knew that he was caught and that he was going to go to prison for the rest of his life. And he just chose to get out now instead of going to prison, which lots of people choose. In our media, we've seen a lot of people get taken down who were hypocritical, who did things. We saw Governor Cuomo in New York recently taken down for his actions. He decided to resign. And now we have a new governor there. And he was a very powerful man. He was probably going to be reelected again. He may have been a presidential candidate. He seemed to be pretty popular. But now he's gone and out of the picture. And also gone out of the picture now, at least for the time being, is his brother Chris Cuomo. The NBC guy, power line or something with Chris Cuomo. And I got to tell you, you know, what he did was not appropriate. To come up with, apparently what we're told he did, was to come up with material about the women who were complaining about his brother to try and go after them. That on its face, you know, it's one thing if you knew for sure somebody was lying and you could prove it, you know, you'd want that to come out. But it didn't look like these women were lying. It didn't appear that they were lying. It appeared that they were telling the truth, that something inappropriate happened to each one of them, and it involved Governor Cuomo. Well, Chris Cuomo decides to try and help his brother and give him advice, do opposition research on the women who were making complaints. All of that's not appropriate to do, okay? But I have to tell you, it's his brother, okay? And I'm going to give these kudos here to Tucker Carlson from Fox News, because I like Tucker. I think he's pretty bombastic. He throws out a lot of facts. You know, you can spend days going over what he's telling us, but he makes a good presentation. And he had a comment, and I said to myself, I was shaking my head while he was saying it, when he said, listen, he doesn't like Chris Cuomo. He doesn't like his points of view. He doesn't like the way he interviews. He doesn't like the guy. Okay, fair enough. We all like some people. We don't like others. Some people like Lieutenant Joe. Some people don't. I get it. You know, this Chris Cuomo, I found him to be abrasive, hypocritical. I didn't like the guy personally myself either. He didn't seem like a guy you'd want to hang around with. But he had every right to be on TV and make his point of view. A lot of people liked him. And therefore, that's what should decide whether he's on TV. But apparently, he did some things that he lied about. And he told probably his bosses and all of us that I never did anything but tell my brother to tell the truth and let the chips fall where they may. Now, that's a paraphrase, but that's basically what he told the world and probably his bosses. And then it came out just recently that he was probably doing a lot more to undermine the women who were coming forward. And Tucker Carlson's point was, of all the things I don't like about Chris Cuomo, what he was doing was trying to help his brother. And how do you fault somebody for helping their brother? It's family. And I'm sitting there shaking my head going, you know, I can't really disagree with that. I can understand his impetus to do it. His brother was under attack. Maybe he really believed his brother didn't do these things. Maybe Governor Cuomo didn't do these things. I don't know. We haven't had a court case yet. We've had an investigation. And the victims seem very, very credible. The situation seemed very credible, but we don't know. We won't know until there's a trial, you know, until the facts come out, right? Until we actually hear testimony and facts and ask questions that are uncomfortable, right? But other than that, trying to help his brother, I have to agree with Tucker. I kind of see, you know, the lying part, no good. He should lose his job for that. He should lose his job for doing opposition research and pretending to be a journalist. But helping his brother, that's what you do. You help family, you know? So of all the things that I have ever thought about this guy, helping his brother, I get it. I understand why somebody would help their brother. And like I said, maybe he honestly believes his brother is not guilty, that his brother didn't do these things, that his brother's being set up. You know, again, conspiracy theorists will jump in here. Well, Cuomo was going to get the nomination the next time around. They wanted to get rid of him, so they shot him down. Who knows? Do we know that those things go on or don't go on? Have you ever been in the middle of a political organization or any organization where people make decisions so that they can make things happen one way or another? That's part of being in an organization, right? And I don't mean doing things illegally, but coming up with strategy. What are we going to do? Who can we move to the front? Who can we move to the back? Who do we promote? Who do we get rid of so that we make our case as strong as possible? So when I saw that happen to Chris Cuomo, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, when you see the hypocrisy, when you see he has somebody on there that you disagree with and he doesn't ask the hard questions. They only ask the nice questions. When he has Joe Biden on, who's been hiding in the basement for months running for president, and you don't question him about that, but you then go after Trump for what he had for lunch. You had 2 scoops of ice cream. Do you think that's appropriate? And you go nuts. It's not balanced. And that's what makes it uncomfortable. So when you see a guy like him get caught up in this nonsense, you say, well, you know, he was a lying, hypocritical kind of guy for a long time. And now he got caught, I guess. But there's no good in any of this for anybody. You know, you would hope that everybody would just be honest, give their opinion, based on their beliefs and what they think, and then try and back it up in a conversation. That's what we try and do here. Isn't that what we do here when we get together every day? Don't I bring up topics and ask us to think about it? And I ask you to think about it. You have to have your own opinions about things. You don't need my opinions. But I give you my opinions and my reasoning and my thoughts so that we can think about things. That's what seems to be missing anymore. We don't get to think. We either get to believe what we're told to believe, or we're wrong, and they'll come after you and get rid of you because you toe the line. Is that justice? Is that freedom? Is that how we want to live in our country? I don't think it is. I think we need to have vigorous debate on issues. I think we need to be able to talk openly and get our opinions out there. And if we don't like someone's opinion or they can't convince people that their opinion is right, they will just naturally, their point of views will just naturally be moved past. You know, that's what elections are supposed to be, aren't they? I believe A, B, C, and D. And someone else says, I believe E, F, G, and H. And then we are supposed to look at those issues and go, well, I believe A, B, C, G, and H. So I think my best candidate's going to be number one. I'm going to go with that person. And then we vote for them. And then we see how it works out. We don't like it. The next election, we vote for somebody else. But when we have all of these forces that are engaged in hypocritical reporting, lying reporting, hiding stories, in the Rittenhouse case, hiding the good video from the defense. You know, that's terrible. What if it was you and the prosecutor was going after you and they hid the good video that could help you? You know, you might say, well, I hate Kyle Rittenhouse. I think he should go to prison and I'm glad they hid that video. What if it was you or somebody in your family and they were charged with something and there was a video to show they didn't do it and the prosecutor just wanted to get them? And therefore, they didn't give the evidence to the defense so they could mount a defense. You know, we can dislike defendants. That's a normal thing. If somebody does something bad or evil, we dislike that person. But that's where when the law comes in, when justice comes together, that person deserves a fair trial. Otherwise, none of us get justice. So we might not like something somebody did. But they get to have a defense, they get to have a trial, they get to have the facts come out, however they come out. And if the person did something illegal, then they'll be held to account in most cases. In some cases, we do see things that don't work out. We do see a real thing called jury nullification. This is a real known phenomenon where for whatever reason, people on the jury don't care what was said to them. They are doing something that they think is more important, and therefore this person belongs to a movement or whatever, and we are finding them guilty regardless of what the facts say, or not guilty. And that's more likely for jury nullification. They nullify the facts. They don't care what the facts are. They're going to find this person not guilty because they don't believe that there was fairness in the system. They don't believe that there was appropriateness in it. There's lots of different reasons that we see jury nullification, but it's a real thing. And that is just as bad for our system, but it's part of our system. And when the jury does that, you have to grin and bear it. You can't do anything really about it. You have to just understand why did it happen and what can we do in the future so that we don't have people that upset? Is there really justice out there? You know, when we look at our court system, this prosecutor that handled the case in the Rittenhouse case, this has been a topic of discussion in legal worlds and law enforcement worlds. And, you know, the goal of a police investigation can't be to prove what the officer thinks happened. It has to be about uncovering the truth, whichever way the truth goes. Now, when I teach police officers and I teach them about doing investigations, one of the things that I make sure I really drill home, I want them to understand your job as an investigator is not just to prove someone's guilty in your investigation. Your job is to uncover the truth of an incident. And however that truth comes out, That is what you stand by. If that means someone is proved that they did something and they're held accountable, then so be it. But if your investigation proves that someone didn't do something, that is just as important as finding someone guilty of something, because you're there to serve justice. Your investigation should be to uncover the truth wherever that truth lies. It doesn't matter who the players are, what the people are. It comes down to what is the truth, what is justice. So trying to hammer that point home, you know, you get kind of caught up as a police investigator or a prosecutor that, well, your hypothesis and your evidence tells you that Bob Jones did this, and therefore we have to work hard to get all the evidence we can to make sure Bob Jones goes to court and is held accountable, and that's all good. That's all good. That's the idea of conducting an investigation. But we have to be open-minded. You know, you can't go into a thing going, I know Bob Jones did it, if you don't for a fact know he did it. It might be your investigative hypothesis. You might have some superficial evidence that leads you to believe that you have a reasonable suspicion that Bob Jones did it. But you always have to keep your mind open to the fact that it might look like Bob Jones did it, but in reality, he might not have done it. Right? We have to stay open to that. And likewise, our prosecutors. We can't have prosecutors so invested in winning that they don't do what they're supposed to do. And this comes back, and we said this recently. You know, it's better that 12 guilty people walk than one innocent person go to jail. That's our system, as frustrating as that might be. So in the Rittenhouse case, when you see that they had very, very clear drone footage of the situation and they disposed of it, they gave the defense a very blurry version that hardly anyone could pay attention to, until it came out that they had a better version and they were forced to give it up. That is not justice. Even if this kid was a homicidal maniac and went out there just to attack people, that wouldn't be fair to hold back that evidence. We, on the prosecution side, are the good guys and the good girls. We put our case forward and then people judge that evidence. So this is another part of where we've kind of gone wrong. And I think, you know, listening to the defense in the Rittenhouse case, when they're like, listen, they knew they had this video and they hid it from us. I can imagine this happens in other prosecution cases. Well, I don't want to think that that happens in other prosecution cases. I've been involved with lots of prosecutors' offices, lots of very, very good, decent men and women who prosecute cases. And I have seen them tell me, go out and get more evidence. Go out and interview this person again. Go out and do this again, when they could have fudged it a little bit. And I'm glad they never did. I'm glad they never asked me to do such a thing. Because I honestly believe that my goal was to find the truth, not to convict somebody. That wasn't my job, to convict people. My job was to conduct an investigation, do the best I could to figure out who did what, and then present that to the prosecutors, who then made a case. Either the information I produced indicates someone did something illegal and should be held to account, or my case proved that that person did not do it. And then it was up to the prosecutor's office to make the decision to charge, to not charge, to take someone to trial, not take someone to trial, whatever. My vested interest was in doing a good investigation, to uncover the truth. Now, if we took that as a mantra, could you imagine, as a country, if we took that as a mantra and said, let's just all be truthful in our beliefs and the things that we say and do. Let's not try and go after people because we don't like what they say and we want to hurt them. Let's just deal with the truth. And if our side wins, our side wins. If our side loses, it means we didn't make a good enough case. Right? We have to go out and do more work. We have to convince people and show them that our way was the right way. And that is really the essence of what justice is about. Now, if it sounds like I'm droning on about this a little bit, I apologize to my friends out there. But this has really been an eye-opener to me, that you've been here with me for a long time. You know what I'm about. You understand the things I talk about and the questions that I ask, uncomfortable questions, the things I look at. And to think that somebody would come along and try and come after me simply because I'm asking questions that they don't want asked, or they don't like the answers. They prefer some other manufactured answer. And I won't give that manufactured answer. I ask the questions because I think that is my duty. Otherwise, I shouldn't have this very, very lucky spot to be able to talk to you, to have my voice heard. And I choose to use my voice, just like I did in my career, to ask the questions, to uncover the truth. That is justice. And that is what chasing justice is all about. So I want to thank everybody for being out there. You know, we're moving through our year here. It's going faster and faster. There's a lot of things coming up. We're going to see what's going to come out with Omicron. Will Omicron take over the United States? Will there be more shutdowns? Are we going back to masks? I knew in New York now, they're not mandating it, but they're saying you should wear a mask everywhere now in public. Are they going to go back to mandating? Are we going to have more shutdowns? Some schools are shutting down because a couple kids get sick and then they shut the whole district down. I don't know. Obviously, we're not out of this yet, ladies and gentlemen. Right? There's more vaccines being made in the background. Hopefully, they can come up with vaccines that people are more confident in. You know, maybe if there hadn't been such a mess about the vaccines and calling people names and hiding information, that maybe people would have been less vaccine afraid. All right? But instead, we're not allowed to talk about certain things, and that causes much of the problem. So, remember, when I say at the end of most of our get-togethers here, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem, I guess that's a double-edged sword. Because if you ask questions that people don't like you asking, if it uncovers things that they don't want heard or questions they don't want asked, they get uncomfortable. And lots of people do. And we have to get away from that. We have to be able to ask questions. I've said a long time ago that free speech is the linchpin of our freedom. If we do away with free speech, our freedom is not far behind. So free speech is what it means to be part of the solution and not a part of the problem. Stand up for free speech, even if you don't like it, what someone is saying. Right? Everyone should be able to say what they want to say. Doesn't mean we have to like what they say. But the fact, if we start shutting people down, then we're going to end up shutting down everyone, including us. So listen, this is Lieutenant Joe for Chasing Justice. Have a great day, and we will see you next time here on the America Out Loud Radio Network.